I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Yeah.
Welcome to What Drives You. I'm Kevin Miller. You have all the drive you need, as much as anyone else, but in each area of your life, you are driven by desire or fear. So let's get you aligned and driven by your authentic desires so you are driving further, faster, and most of all, enjoying the ride every day. What Drives You is brought to you by Ziglar, your source for coaching excellence. If you're a coach or are interested in coaching, please go to Ziglar.com. Let the wisdom and sales skills of Zig Ziglar equip you to be an influential and successful coach. I also invite you to join us in our community. It's called the Drive Tribe, and we continue the conversations from these shows and topics and go deeper together to help each other drive further, faster, and enjoy the ride. You can find it at kevinmiller.co. Click the community button. You can also connect with me on social media, where you're now going to find postings of all these shows, just really key clips and messages. You can see the whole thing on YouTube if you want to. And again, find me at kevinmiller.co. All right, now I'm going to talk with my brother, Jared. And if you enjoy this show, please give us a rating at Spotify and on Apple Podcast as well. And you can always go deeper into your drive by checking out my book, What Drives You, wherever you get your books. In this episode, we're continuing the series on transforming conflict. We began it with William Ury. William's one of the world's best-known experts on negotiation, the world's literally across the globe. He's the co-author of Getting to Yes. It's the world's all-time best-selling book on the topic, with more than 15 million copies sold. He's a co-founder of Harvard's program on negotiation, and his brand new book, In Our Muse, for part one of this series, the book for you guys watching over the left of my shoulder here. It's called Possible: How We Survive and Thrive in the Age of Conflict. Well, here today, for part three, I brought on my brother, Jared Angaza. He's served many organizations stateside over in Africa and other places on this topic of negotiation, or more so conflict resolution. So I want to dig further into this issue today. Well, brother, man, I know that William Ury and his topic is 100% up your alley. And as I talked about in the intro, you know, talking about conflict resolution, man, I got to be candid for anybody who knows me like you, not a strong point for my life. As a very conflict averse guy, I don't want to deal with any conflict. I just want to run. So there's my premise. Give me your thoughts on the show.
Well, I'll let you off the hook a little bit in that you, in this family, came by it very naturally, conflict avoidance.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, well, I shouldn't say that. I think it's largely just due to my work with being an activist. You're dealing with conflict. And I had to figure it out. I was in so much conflict all the time, I had to figure it out. I was saving this for when you and I get on the mic, but I think this might have been my favorite episode. I mean, it's hard to say that because there's lots, but man, it's such a great episode. And it's so, who doesn't get touched by conflict? Nobody. I mean, the Dalai Lama gets hit with conflict.
Well, and I did appreciate William's, you know, Bill is what he goes by, right. But you know, his take on, if we didn't have conflict, we'd ultimately die. I mean, if we didn't have the ability to deal with it, we would all just pass away at some point. I mean, it's right. needed as a natural correction, you know, standpoint. We get that. I mean, you cannot raise a kid without some conflict, because when they walk over to the edge of the cliff, if it's conflict to say no and they cry, well, okay, but I'm not going to let them fall off the cliff. I mean, it's needed for survival. I get it there.
That's you just brought something up, actually. I thought of with Taya, my youngest daughter, and she said, "Daddy, I think I know, but would you ever lie to us?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, maybe I don't know. What do you mean?" She's 8. And I said, "Well, baby, if something was happening, and I'd have to think. Remember, I'm a strategist. Whatever's the most likely thing to get you from doing the thing that might hurt you, I'm going to say it in the moment. And we can talk about it later if I had to lie. But I care about your safety in the moment." And I'll bring that back to what we're talking about here with conflict. This came up with Bill a few times, both of you talking about needing to resolve a conflict or whatever, and whether or not that was the goal. And I often am in a situation where I'm not necessarily there to resolve the conflict. I'm there to create harmony. So if I'm in an activist situation in Congo, you know, where I've been there, I have to figure out what do I do? I know these guys aren't going to agree. I already know that going into the deal. So if I go in there with the idea of I got to get these people to agree on something and resolve the conflict, I know I'm going in for a fail. But if I go in and say, look, I know these guys don't agree. They haven't agreed for, say, the last 200 years. There's going to be a problem. What if I could just create harmony in the situation for us to be able to move forward in some way? That's almost always the goal. And I realize that with my kids a lot, too. You know, like with, you know, where I'm saying, hey, Sersha, I know you don't agree with Taya, but that's okay. You don't actually have to agree. You don't even have to resolve the conflict. But if you two could create peace, that would be great, because we're in a family. So I think a lot of times, maybe I'm interested in kind of starting there and saying conflict resolution isn't always about resolution, in my opinion. It's really about, can I create harmony in this situation? And you know me well enough to know that this topic is enough for me to just go off on my own the whole time. So I'll pause here, but I have some thoughts too, just about the framing of it as well. Go ahead.
Well, maybe that's what I'm going to get into. Cause when you said that, that did stand out. I feel like that's freaking huge. It's like a mic drop, in that we use that word. I use that word. It was a premise. I began the show with conflict resolution. And that feels like we have to come to an agreement, which sometimes it is not possible. So we are stuck. And so I hear you saying harmony, and I wrote down, we're almost saying conflict progression. We have to get past it. We have to be, what can we do to move on? So if we're not going to agree, we do have to keep going forward and not be stuck. So it's almost like, let's make a deal. You know, let's figure something out where we can continue. But that feels dramatically significant to people, whether they're talking about a political conflict or they're talking about a conflict in the bedroom or wherever it may be, you know, at home with kids or spouse or whatever, of saying you do not have to agree. Man, that was big news, again, in the intimate relationships for me to realize, or to have somebody said, it was a therapist at some point, I don't know, that said, you don't have to agree. You can agree to disagree. And I was like, holy smokes, that gives me a whole new world to live in, because I came under the guise that conflict resolution is you have to come to a point of agreement. And at some point, we're not going to agree. I mean, if you really like celery, I just don't. I'm not gonna, and I don't want to. Can that be okay? I mean, it's not like
that's a good part of it. I mean, that's a good way to address it too, because I'm looking at it and saying, I like celery. I don't care if you like celery, but a lot of people do. It'll be like, no, you got to like, it's like coffee drinkers, as you know, it's like, oh, I think you did the coffee tea thing with Bill.
And I did.
Yeah. And we both know, I mean, I was in the coffee biz, you know, with a bunch of coffee snobs. And I know that can be a serious conversation about what type of coffee or whatever, especially coffee versus tea. But at the end of the day, I can be at much more peace if I don't need you to like coffee too. Like, so I like my coffee. I can be, you know, over the moon about my coffee, nerding out and everything, and still not need you to also want coffee. You can like tea. And I go, hey, I respect your love of tea just as much as my love of coffee.
And so if we're going up into space in one of your space programs and you can only take one thermos, that's when we have conflict.
Except that not you.
Well, if we were both going, if we were both going, and we both have to share, and there's one thermos, now we have one, and we're saying, and this is facetious because I really like coffee and I like tea, but we're at stark disagreement. I like tea, you like coffee, and there's no way we're going to change. We got to come up with a deal, a compromise, something, and you finally say, look, dude, we can only take one. How about if we take coffee, but the only food we can take, you get to pick that one. Okay. So sure.
That would be a normal kind of conflict resolution where we make a compromise. That the compromise is the result out of that.
Yeah. We resolved to, I don't know who it was. I wish I could give him credit, but the person who long ago that I read, probably a therapist or somebody, and it was in the idea of compromise. And they were trying to bring it into, you don't compromise like you're giving up. If you both, you want to both get something out of it and synergize. Semantics maybe, but there is, you know, however you look at it, we're looking at how can we come up with something equitable, fair?
Yeah. I mean, if you're both sitting on some little seat and there's room for one butt and you need to get two people on there, the guy that's already on there is going to have to just go halvesies on it in order to accommodate the other person, which is not necessarily as comfortable or enjoyable as where he was prior to the situation.
Let him sit on his knees, something. Yeah.
So a compromise implies that both sides are taking a little bit of a hit and saying, I'm okay with that because the greater outcome we're looking for here is in fact greater than me having to sit on half the seat or whatever. So you're weighing at that point. There are lots of other little conflicts. Most of the conflict that we deal with on the day to day is not big catastrophic conflict stuff. I've dealt with, you know, there were guns involved in Africa, you know. So that's a big conflict. But on the whole, we have, you know, relationships, spouse stuff, you know, or stuff with our kids or close friends or other family members, you know. Parents, brothers, sisters, that kind of stuff. We have those kind of relational conflicts. Most of those times, they're based on some sort of opinion and an agenda. There's a formula there. It's like, I have an opinion about this and I have an agenda to convince you, to get my way, to whatever it is. There's an agenda attached to it. A lot of times a conflict can be dissolved, I'd say probably better than resolved, dissolved. Conflict can kind of go away if the other person doesn't need the other person, or one person doesn't need the other one to acquiesce, to agree, to whatever it is. If you're in the kind of conflict, so much of the conflict that we bring upon ourselves is based on some sort of preference. And we talked about that, you and I have talked about that, I think, many times, in that there's a Buddhist philosophy, something along the lines of it's a lot easier to reach enlightenment when you don't have any preferences, which is kind of an exaggerated way to just say, when you analyze things, how often is the problem just according to one of your preferences or a result of one of your preferences?
Yeah. Yes. Agreed. Well, and that gets to the kind of the Terry Real. So we had Terry on the show. He's the author of Us and famous for being Gwyneth Paltrow's relationship expert. And he, you know, somewhat famously says, or he quotes and he repeats it a lot, something to the aspect of, you know, it's, you can't look at right and wrong. My way's right, their way's wrong. If you're together and you're trying to find something and be in harmony, you just got to figure out what to do with the issue and quit arguing that it's right or wrong. And so what you said, that it is a preference, and take right and wrong off the table and do that. But over here, I do want to go to the exaggerated, not the exaggerated, but the place that I feel like most people are going to go. they're going to take it to the extreme and go to the worst conflict that they have with the worst enemy, or, you know, the worst scenario, whatever, where they feel, I'll never forget a guy, a friend of mine saying that, man, we all seek justice, but if you come together seeking justice, it's the assumption that everyone is just. And sometimes they may not be. So let's just assume that everybody listening right now is involved or has been involved in a conflict where you feel like the other person is not there for the betterment of mankind or anyone. They're there because of their wounding, their fear, their ego, their whatever, and they're really not being just. This is, you know, fairness is kind of off the table, and you're left to figure out how to some degree. I've been in those, you've been in those, we've been in those together, not between you and us, but, you know, we're dealing with somebody else. I feel like, man, at this point, we're just trying to minimize the damage. What on earth can we do? Yeah. Because we're not dealing with somebody who is, we're dealing with somebody who's there to take care of themselves and not be just. That's where it feels like the crap hits the fan for most of us in this.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's often a, I mean, typically, I'm kind of checking myself as I'm saying this, but I feel like there's usually a preference for, you know, there's a situation when we're coming into and say we have a conflict with an outside company or something like that, and we have to deal with that. There's a lot of times this idea that I'm doing this to win. I got to win this thing, this argument, this battle, this conflict, whatever it is. We need to win this. How do we win? And I often will come back and say, well, I need to adjust my goal a little bit. Because again, and I kind of got to this earlier, but what if my goal is just harmony? Because if we've got some harmony, then we can move forward. It's kind of like if you're, you know, if you're in the car going somewhere together, two people, and you're all going the same way. And then at some point somebody says, hey, I don't like the direction we're going. I don't like the way we're going there. I don't even like this car, you know, whatever it is. At that point you have a decision. Okay. Do we have to resolve all of this? Or can we just say, look, we know we don't agree, but can we just keep driving and talk about it while we're driving? Mm-hmm. Now that's a good idea most times, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the situations that I've been in, because of the nature of the conflict being so dire, or the consequences of the conflict possibly being very dire, that's the best I'm shooting for. And that's kind of the, can we agree to disagree, you know, but there's lots of situations where it's like, I could say this and take it up a notch, or I could not, and it may not make any difference in what I'm looking for. If I'm just looking for harmony, saying this might take it in a different direction. If I'm looking to win, saying this might make me feel like I'm going to win more. So again, if I have to kind of look at the goal here, it's like, what's the goal when I go into that argument, or whatever it is that's coming at me? Is it to win? Meaning, I think in that point, it is like a soccer game or a football game or whatever. It's to conquer the other side. There has to be a loser. And if that's our case. Yeah.
And what I would say, that's our cultural programming.
Oh, for sure.
My gosh, you and I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons. And who was it? It was Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. It was Tom and Jerry.
I don't even let my kids watch that stuff anymore.
But that's what it was. It was conflict, and it was right or wrong. It was the good guy and the bad guy. And then we watched Star Wars. And then we watch, you know, name every epic show. It's all there. It's the story of all time, it seems to be. And now we go on to social media or the news headlines, and it's the Republicans and the Democrats. It's that side and this side. That's what we're used to. And it is, if you're on one, you're on the right side, and everybody else is by proxy on the wrong side, as opposed to the, this is our preference. This is what we have decided to put our faith to the best that we know, not right or wrong, you know, and how can we move forward? And here, William Ury is, and you know, you have, and you're sitting with people who are about to go to war with each other. I mean, this is catastrophic. And it's the same principles that we deal with when we're sitting across the, you know, table from our, whatever, our business partner or a lawyer or your spouse or whatever. And it's this feeling of, oh my gosh, this seems right and true to me. And this person wants something different. And yeah, we get, I think our minds culturally if not genetically to some point, we're programmed to think we're in the right, they're in the wrong. I'm a Christian, you're a Catholic, so you're wrong. There's not a space to go, no, man, we can hang out together. And most of our value, we're like 95% in line with the same values, or 75%. Somebody's going to be really upset I said 95% with Catholics and Christians, right. But you know, to some degree. And I brought that up, I think I did with William, and I have with other shows, because I know it's such a volatile subject, is abortion. And I look at it and go, what is the stalwart bottom line value of each person? The value of a life. The woman's choice, the kid's rights, whatever. But they still, and I'm like, man, kudos to both of you. You value life. There's a lot of people that don't. You're right. Both in my camp. You know, you value life. Now, then we get into the, you know, the issues of it, and everybody thinks it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Man, that's a hard place to come from. It takes a reprogramming to get to this, to even get on this platform. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin. When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is, we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com. Man, that's a hard place to come from. It takes a reprogramming to get to this, to even get on this platform.
Yeah. And I mean, even the political kind of section of conflict that you're pointing to is very volatile, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and I'm not just the topic of abortion, but all of the different political sides and all that. There's a lot of what we call triggers there. People get triggered. I appreciate what Gabor Mate says about triggers. He says, someone can trigger you, but you're the only one with the ammo. And I really appreciate that, because that has a lot to do with what we're about to talk about next. Because this, William or Bill talked about this quite a bit. Yeah. He said that there's this idea of rushing to the plate, you know, to get this conversation, like to retort. So you've said something and now I'm just waiting on the edge of my seat to say the next thing. That's how conflicts get really out of hand really quick. We see it on, you know, Jerry Springer, whatever, that kind of stuff. There is something beautiful about creating a pause between here and there. Man, out of all of my conversations, I think I've even talked to you about this with another friend, Aaron. We talk constantly, we're dads, about the pause. Can I create a pause between the time my kid spouts off about something or whatever and the time I go back, or, you know, a spouse or a partner or whatever it is. Anybody that's coming at you about anything, any conflict that's coming at you for that matter. Actually, it doesn't even have to be an animate object. It could be inanimate. It could be something else that's just happening to you in the day. It rained today and I didn't want it to. It's conflict in my mind. Yeah. So I have to think about, how is it that I respond and or react to that? Because I think there is a very specific difference. My goal is to be able to, let's say you just said something offensive to me. I could pride myself on being able to come back with a really hard hitting response or reaction to that, right? I could react to that emotionally and just wallop you with words on the other side. And I think a lot of people take a lot of pride in their ability to do that. And being a wordsmith, I am pretty good at doing that, but I don't want to show up that way. What I want to do is create a pause, and rather than reacting emotionally, I want to respond intentionally, which is literally on the opposite side of the pendulum at that point. So the difference between the two typically is, can I create a half a second pause before words start coming out of my mouth? Like, am I able to do that? And you mentioned this in the interview with Bill, and you said that, you know, something the effect of your ability to do that is going to be reliant on your practice. Are you practicing that all the time? Which is a great thing to point out. Even if you don't remember it, you did say it. I took a note. It's absolutely true that it takes practice, usually in the small things, to be able to then create the pause with the big thing that comes at you. You know, usually that's a spouse remark, because you're able to be freer in your reacting sometimes in a talk with your spouse, which is not necessarily something to be proud of, but it's true often. So it's like, can I create the pause before I come back and say the thing I wanted to say, or that I thought was deserved in that moment, or the just thing, justice? That's a complicated scenario. Something I've dealt a lot with as an activist. It doesn't always apply in the home in that way, in the same way.
Yeah.
So I think the idea is, can I practice enough all day in the little things to be able to create a pause, so that when something does come my way that feels prickly, that's a conflict, I can pause for a moment, connect with my higher self and in the way that I really want to respond, and then I can do it. It's just that little bitty bridge there that I can create to be able to come from here, angry, you know, triggered, reacting in some way, to being over here and saying, I intentionally want to handle this way. And I'm remembering my goal is not to win. It's for harmony. I actually just want harmony.
Yeah.
You can't get there without the pause in between. And you can't get to the pause in between in a heated moment without a whole lot of practice when it's not heated. the pause.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about the big things and the little things. And I'm sometimes wondering if I'm better at it with the really big thing.
Usually we are.
Not so good.
It's noticeable.
With the little stuff. Because the big thing requires a resolution. The big confrontation. Well, I mean, take business and there's lots of money on the line. Man, you've got to resolve it. The little things, relationally especially, I am really good at generally not reacting. I can sit there. I can take it. But my pause is not just a pause. I'm out. I'm
good. Well, that's the other one that came up when I was thinking, because I was laughing when I was listening to you and Bill talking. He talks about going to the balcony. I love that. Yes. And I've always said, hey, you got to create the pause. You got to, I think I'm going to say the balcony now, because that's so much better. But to go out to the balcony, I feel like in society, we have two typical kind of reactions, if you will. One, I'm going to come at you with all I got, guns blazing, no pause whatsoever. Boom, boom, boom. That's common. The other one, maybe just as common, is, yeah, I'll be right back. I'm out. There's nothing. Ghost. Like, totally out of the conversation. I've been guilty of both, actually. But and then there is, interestingly enough, what Bill would call, what he said, the third something. And I can't remember, because I've always said the third way. There's a third way that's possible. And you know, our father, Dad, was very into the third way discussion. He and I talked about endlessly about the third way discussion, as you know, we've also heard from Rob Bell and Richard Rohr and lots of, and Jesus, by the way, he was the third way man.
It was the balcony and then the bridge and then the third side.
So it's that there, I wrote in Dad's tribute that Dad always believed in the third way. There's always another way to look at this. Okay. I want this. You want that. What's the third way that if we came together, we might be able to find together.
Yeah.
And I do love that. I think that's so important. Even that, you can't get to the third way without a pause at the balcony. You don't jump straight to the third way typically. It takes going to the balcony, thinking about it, realigning the conversation, possibly most likely realigning my perspective about the conversation. Maybe remembering again, what is the goal here, or what could be a new goal, because this one's not working, or whatever it is. Connecting with my higher self is kind of the easiest way I can say that. It's like, I need to center myself and come back with a good response here. Hold on a second. I'll be right back. But then come back. Because I know bailing on the conversation is not going to help any more than going at it, you know, toe to toe. Neither one are really a good way to resolve it or create harmony, depending on the goal. So I think that pause and going out to the balcony, and maybe that's a good place to think about your third way. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to take a breather for a second. What's a third option here that maybe we haven't made room for because we both came in with our own biases, which we always do, and our own agendas, which we normally do as well. That balcony pause that's where it's at.
It's interesting. I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking, I mean, the book's called Possible, How We Survive. And in parentheses, and thrive in an age of conflict. But it's interesting that he used the word, I'm now paying attention to that, the first word he uses survive. I mean, I didn't ask him, I wish I had, to say, man, tell me a story of a negotiation that wasn't that successful. Right. Because at some point, you're going to end up with somebody who's not, they will not stand for harmony. They want their way, end of story, done. And everybody listening, there's a good chance that they've encountered that at least once in their lives. And in that standpoint, we're just looking about how do we survive through this? And you and I have been in those standpoints, you know, looking about, this is not going to end up equitable for every, it's impossible. The person's just not willing. So we're just looking to minimize our losses, literally. And that happens sometimes. And then that's where I feel like practicing. And now I'm about my inner self. At the end of the day, I mean, I think our next or the series we just did was on inner mastery with Hitendra Wadhwa. Yeah. And I want to be preparing myself now for when there's not going to be a resolution. There's not going to be harmony. It's going to be bad. I'm going to take a hit. This isn't fair because I know we could say the beauty of it, but to some point we realized not long ago, our dad got a an end of life diagnosis. And at some point we all realized this is not, we're not negotiating out of this. He's going to die. So how do I, and since then we've talked about, you know, preparing ourselves for the big thing of, you know, the possibility of someone else that we love, you know, dying, whether it's a child, right, or whatever. Man, am I doing the work? Am I doing the inner work? As Hitendra would talk about, the mastery to be able to survive that. I want to be able there, even as I'm optimistic that we can go in and increase the chances for good negotiation, for harmony, and that we can come together and be just people on both sides. But sometimes it's just not going to happen. So what can I do? So I want to, one, increase my abilities to thrive within conflict, and then also be strengthening myself to deal with the times when it's just not. And we are victimized. I mean, that word exists. We don't want to be a victim, but we will be victimized. Something will happen. And I want to be ready for, I want to be ready for both. I want to be the MacGyver who's there to, you know, no matter what we got, there's a possibility, there's a way out of this. Yeah. And it may be by the skin of your teeth survival. And I want to be ready internally for that as well.
Yeah. And I mean, again, we all deal with this and we are all reactive to some degree. I think Bill said that too. I'm going to rejig a little bit here in that we, you know, you and I have talked a lot about my love of The Art of War, the book, and the concept, Sun Tzu. Anyone that's studied the book knows that it's not about creating war. It's about essentially avoiding war at all costs. Or I shouldn't say at all costs, but it's avoiding war, period. Sun Tzu says, you know, if you've gone to war, you've really already lost. Best you can do at this point is recover well. But war is always the thing to avoid. What he's talking about in The Art of War is really kind of the art of conflict and how to deal with conflict. And ultimately, it is also more about harmonizing the situation rather than resolving the situation, which I really appreciate. Being involved with such crazy, difficult, complex political battles and social, cultural battles like I have in activism sort of forces you into a point where it's like, man, if I'm stuck up on the details, I'm going to be here forever. But if we can get a general movement forward, that's going to be good enough for what we need. And I've had to do that a lot of times. But Bill talked a lot about creating a golden bridge. That's a Sun Tzu discussion, literally those words. He says, you know, for your opponent, when you're going to battle, make sure that you paint a beautiful golden bridge. He literally says golden bridge for your opponent to retreat. And if you do not, you certainly have not, you've not gone to battle strategically. you've certainly not brought your best to the situation, because at that point, all they have left to do is that they've got a wall and you've got you and them up against a wall. That's all they've got. But if you make a beautiful golden bridge on the other side that's as attractive or more, maybe even than the thing that we're talking about, they're more likely to just slip out the back door and go that way. I'm always looking in a situation before I go into a conflict in a conversation, like I know I'm going to go into battle, and I think about all the things that are going to happen. Again, in going through combat training, you know, the idea is to always prepare yourself, go through all the scenarios, go through as many as you can in your head, resolve to them in your mind before you get there, so that when you get there, whatever happens is muscle memory. It's just reactive. It's just coming out because you already practiced it at home before you got there. And you don't have time in the battle to think about it when you're there. You're going to have time to contemplate whether or not you're going to follow through. So I'm always thinking about, okay, if I go into this thing with this person, you know, Joe over here, I'm going to have this conflict. And I know Joe's going to come at me hard. He's a hard driving guy. I'm like, okay, well, what's the best thing that Joe could get out of this thing? And then I think, okay, well, I'm not willing to do that, but what else could I do? What else could we? So I'm thinking about the third way when I get there. I think often the bridge in the back for your opponent to retreat from on through is the third way. I'm thinking about what is the third way. I think the bridge and the third way are often synonymous at that point. So,
man, I like it because we tend to go again to the right or wrong, the right or wrong. And I think about the aspect of if you do that with a customer, I remember being taught that not the customer is always right, but if you engage in a argument and prove you're right with a customer, you lost. If you do that with your spouse, I would say you generally, you lost. It's not helping. Antagonism, man, we have see so much of that. When you antagonize, you put somebody, and I know this because I'm so sensitive myself, of feeling like, man, you just painted me in a corner. There's nowhere I can go. There's no bridge.
You didn't paint me a bridge. You got me in a room where all I can do is fight back. Yep.
Yes, exactly. And I think we do that in conflict, and I'm guilty of that as well. And yet I do like going to business, especially when you got money on the table and you got things happening that, man, you got to come up with something. You got to come up with a bridge. And for, you know, anonymous, but candid, you know, you and I have had some business dealings lately, not between us, but us with other people going, oh my gosh, we got to come up with a bridge. What on earth is it going to be? And you're sitting there brainstorming and coming up, and you finally lob one over and go, okay, here's one. And you hear back and they took it. Yay. You know, we both win. Or they didn't. Oh crap. Okay.
That happened plenty of times in that transaction. But what do we do? You and I spent a lot of time on the balcony in this, you know, discussion. We talked a lot at the balcony. We didn't just react. Had we?
No, there was plenty of times when we got the email and you're like, holy crap, I'm not even going to look at that till tomorrow. Just, I need a new day for that one.
Yeah. Well, it was so sensitive and we had to handle it with kid gloves, the whole thing, because it's like one of those things. It's like the more you go after, the worse it gets. And we were very aware of that, you know, so we had to pull back. And we spent some time on the balcony thinking about the third way. I hadn't really thought about it. That was a great setup, brother. But that's what we did. We sat on the balcony. We thought about the third way of how we could address this, not handle it, not win it, not whatever. But it's like we needed to address this kind of in that same analogy. Like I said before, we're in a car going somewhere together and it's like, they want to stop or they want to turn around or whatever. Like, can we just keep going and talk about it while we're going? Like, without having to cause some big fight. Can we just agree that we're both going in that general direction and talk about it as we go? And I've done that. I mean, I think even in, I was married and am not married now. And I have a hard time even saying the word divorce. It sounds so violent. That is not where we were at. You know where we're at. We're friends. I just hung out with her a minute ago. We hang out, we're close, whatever. We found a way to harmonize our relationship. We moved to San Diego 6 years ago, and I, at the time, was saying, I want to move there to save my marriage. What really happened in the end, I know, is that what we did is we saved our relationship. Our marriage didn't make it, but we're closer and more harmonious and kind and peaceful to each other and for our children than most married couples I know. We're also at more events together than most married couples I know. We all hang out. We're together more than we were when we were married, I think. So, especially in peaceful, happy ways. When I came into that in the beginning, it was just about, we have to do this. We have to fix our marriage. Oh my gosh, man. It was when I let go of fixing my marriage, and letting go is a key component to everything we're talking about. When I let go of that, I was able to see this third way of like, wow, what if we could just have this peaceful, wonderful family and beautiful relationship between the two of us? And again, how that affects the kids. Well, if we could have that, that's a third option I had not previously entertained or even been willing to go to at that point or before. But then when it got to this point, I thought, wow, that's, if what I want is harmony in my family, I've got a path to it. Amazing. Yeah. And so that's what we're doing. It wasn't necessarily resolved in that we both got exactly what we wanted. We didn't. But we did find a path towards harmony. And we resolved, I think, together at that point, that it was more important to have peace in our family than try to fix something or win something or whatever it was that we were caught up in trying to do before. and try to fix something or win something or whatever it was that we were caught up in trying to do before. And I say that
again,
as a very,
I hear
that's a big one.
It's so counterintuitive to our culture.
Absolutely.
I won't say it's counterintuitive, but it is to our culture. I'm looking back at my notes here with Bill, and he talked about, again, not conflict resolution, but transforming conflict. I mean,
yeah.
I don't necessarily, well, but I haven't had, cultural doesn't have a file for that, as one of my therapists would say. What do you mean transform?
It doesn't have a file for most of the stuff we're talking about today.
I haven't either. And he talked about constructive negotiation. And then the statement he made is when it's larger, that's your, I'm going to paraphrase now, but your, the harmony, it, that's larger than reaching an agreement. And man, that's all we think about is an agreement. I mean, I entered into, to use that, you talked about marriage. I entered into that, think that's what marriage is. You are in total agreement all the time on everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
That didn't work ultimately.
It didn't that work for me, I mean, either, obviously.
I mean, how can you be in agreement? And that's why, again, when the therapist said, there are some times when you can agree to disagree and that's okay. You're different people with different flavors and different, you said, preferences. And can we get to that without, and here's the big word, as I look at my notes here that came out of it, if we could take, you talked about preferences, if we could take away the judgment, but then again, yeah, we've got to let go of right or wrong and just say, even though I cannot understand any way on the face of the planet that you could look at that and think that that's okay, if yeah, I have faith that mine is a preference and just take off right or wrong, even though it's almost beyond me. If the point is harmony here, which again brings up, you said this earlier, what is the goal? What is the goal? Now, if
I think
I'm
that
on
gets lost a lot of times in conflict.
Sure. And if I did not have the goal of harmony as a professional cyclist at all, they just had the Super Bowl. They weren't looking for harmony. They're looking to win at just about any cost. Okay.
Well, they want, that's not our lie. No, it's great because you're saying that they wanted to dominate. They wanted to beat the other one. Now, when you think about your relationship with your wife, it's like, well, shoot, don't frame it that way. I'm not trying to dominate. But sometimes we are caught in that energy unconsciously, usually very unconsciously. We're there and we're trying to win in this battle back and forth. And there are times when, you know, Aaliyah and I get into that now for about half a second before I go, wait a minute, I'm not doing that. I don't need to win here. I just want harmony. And I probably cultivate more harmony in this moment by shutting my mouth. And that's what I do a lot of times. With Sersha, it's the same thing. My daughter, my 11-year-old daughter, she's going at it with her sister, brother, or friend, or whatever. And I'm like, hey, baby, I got a secret for you. You can win if you just stop talking for a second, see what happens. And nine times, and she'll laugh. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe that worked. And I'm like, it usually works if you'll just pause for a moment.
Well, I'm thinking about connection then. What is the goal? Is the goal to win or create harmony? Into that, I'm thinking retain some form of connection. So if we're talking about our spouse, our kids, or whatever, at the end of the day, for the most part, we're still striving to have some level of connection. And now to get into, I don't care what arena we're in, business, politics, whatever, in today's day and age, even if I took out my soul that cares to be love in any way, if I took that out and just said, okay, how about just best business practices? I'd say today, man, it is really hard to justify a disconnection with about anybody. Go back to the business stuff that we've dealt with recently, that man, there is too much of a glass house. Stuff gets around.
Yeah.
It's unwise to just try to blow something up and win at all costs. I mean, again, I'm sure somebody's going to take an exception and say, well, if you're a trial lawyer or whatever, okay, that's that we're not in the Super Bowl. We're in the general life that most of us lead. And in business, in relationships, whatnot, there's very, I look at it and I generally end up feeling like, man, I can't afford to just blow this up and try to win.
Yeah.
It's going to sever connection with people and there's bad blood. I don't want to live with that. I fear living with that. Man, what is worth it? Unless there's somebody's life on the line, it is worth harmony. And I find myself looking at that more and more. That's kind of where the inner mastery that I want to get to is that harmony is above all at any time. It comes back to that, excuse me, I read it, Jared. We were talking about it on a show recently, and it's called, I think the term is The Monk and the Baby. That was the story we were looking for, where they were in the village and, you know, a girl gets pregnant and she doesn't want to rat out her boyfriend.
Oh yeah, totally know the story. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And she blames it on the monk, and everybody comes in outrage and says, "You dirty old man, you knocked up this girl." And, you know, later on she gives birth to it, and they go back and say, "Okay, you did it. So, you know, old man, you raised the kid." And he said, and to everything, when they first blamed him, he said, "Is that so?" And they came back and said, "Well, it's, you know, you did it. So it's your kid. You take care of it. Is that so?" And so he took the kid and took care of it. And a year later, and the girl's feeling guilty and whatever, she finally fesses up, and they all come and say, "We're so sorry." Oh, was it? Okay. We're so sorry. And we wrongly accused you, and we'll take the child and care for it. And he says, is that so? I want to be that guy. Yeah. I want to be that guy. And that's hard though, because you think he got stuck with taking care of a kid. That was unjust. And they're exaggerating the point. But what if you lose the money? What if you lose the deal? What if you lose, what is it that you're holding on to? Now we're in an attachment. Yeah, I can see you thinking.
Well, because we're creeping into our territory, for our father was very clear about asking in the moment of conflict, in the challenge, in the difficult thing, whatever, in his case, on his deathbed, what does this make possible? And I think that in the monk discussion, in that parable, in that moment, he was saying, you know, is that so? Okay. What does that make possible in the back of his mind, you know? And what it made possible was him to have the opportunity to raise a child for 9 years, as the story goes, which he would not have had otherwise. So he said, okay, I'll take that challenge. He's a monk. I know, to some degree, at least studying what the monks are agreeing to in that, in the lifestyle that they're agreeing to. And it has a lot to do with taking what comes at you, and immediately, in essence, I'll sort of use our own family kind of phrase here, but what does this make possible? Is to say, okay, I'll take that. What does this make possible? And I think that's an important part of the conflict stuff too, is that actually it's a really important aspect of the third way thinking. Because the third way thinking is really saying, instead of me being angry about this, what could it make possible? Let's look at a third way. That's kind of the transaction there, maybe. And I think another is, you've touched on this a little bit as we've been speaking, but there, the cultural aspect, you kept saying, like, we're not geared for this. We're not, you know, this is in our culture. You're absolutely right. It is not. And that's a very important point to bring up. It is culturally acceptable to go toe to toe with conflict, or to be in conflict all the time, to be stressed out all the time. We live in that kind of culture, especially in the West. Now, it's worth looking at, and Bill pointed this out, indigenous cultures, not just of the past, but even present, that live in tribes. You know, we have our drive tribe community. And part of the reason we chose the word tribe is because the way that a tribe interacts, they're there to support, to push, to challenge, to inspire, to keep accountable. All those things are in a tribe. Now, the tribe looks at a conflict, an illness, someone that is carrying trauma. I'll just stick with those three. Any of those three things and things like them, if one person has it, the tribe looks at it as the tribe having it. It's a fracture in the fabric of the tribe. And when you look at that, it means that no one can suffer on their own. No one has trauma on their own. That's a larger discussion, even with trauma, because it doesn't typically happen solo. It happens in interaction with other people. With conflict in a tribe, if there is a conflict, everyone's going to come around that conflict and say, all right, like they said, like he talked about in the story with the poison, you know, arrows and things like that. I take the poison arrows, take them way far away, and then everybody sits down and has a conversation. It's kind of like being in the car and saying, okay, we're not going to stop the car. We're going to keep going. We'll stay here together. Even we haven't agreed on anything yet. We're just going to, well, maybe we've agreed to continue going forward, but otherwise we haven't agreed on the what the conflict material is. And I think that's important to realize that is representative of a third way to our current society, where it is right or wrong. We fight or we don't. We're passive or we're fighting. You know, one of those two things. There's always a black and white situation. And the tribe is just like, hey, here's a conflict that has arisen. That's natural. Now, as a community, collectively, we will address it. The understanding is also that it came about collectively, not just by one person or whatever. And sometimes it's easy to say, oh, you know, Joe Blow over there was a jerk and caused this problem or whatever. And I can say, fine, that's probably true. I'd like to know a little bit more about Joe's parents and about Joe's surroundings and all the other things that contributed to Joe acting that way just now. It isn't just one person. It's always collective. That's getting into Thomas Hubel's discussion, which we've had on here as well. So I think we have plenty of precedent. We just don't look at it or maybe apply it to our own world as much. There is precedent for harmonizing conflict on the regular and having mechanisms within your culture to continually harmonize conflict, if that's the goal.
I'm not stuck in a bad way, but in a good way, I'm thinking about the third way and how I'm a visual person. So, you know, I'm thinking visually that as opposed to here's a table and I'm sitting across from it and you're sitting across from it, that we just don't do that anymore. From now on, it's a triangular table and you're on one side, I'm on a side, and there's a third one. That's the only reason we're there. This is conflict. We don't agree right now, or we have different desires. And so by proxy of coming together, we are not sitting across from each other. We're sitting at a triangular table, one, one, and we're trying to figure out the third way. That's the only reason we're there. Otherwise, just grab a gun and point it at each other. If that's the goal, if it's the Super Bowl, then go nuts. Yeah. What is the goal? And if the goal is, okay, we're not here just to, I guess that's it. There's your goal. That makes it pretty simple. Okay. You guys have conflict. Is your goal to win and annihilate the other person? If the answer is yes, you don't need William Urey's book.
Right.
There's no negotiation.
Yeah.
Just go nuts. And you know, the strong survives, or the smarter or the clever or the devious or the whatever. Yeah. If that's not the case, which in most of our lives, 99.99% of the time, it's not, then let's sit on, you know, a triangle sides of the two sides and look at the other one. That's the point. That is why we were here. We're not here by proxy. You're saying, okay, obviously, if you're not sitting across from the table directly, you're not there to convince. You're not there to win. You're not there. This is the one that gets me, because in hard conversations, hard conflict, I realize, it was stark to me because a therapist brought it up. And she said, are you there? And now I'm paraphrasing, but are you there to connect? Or are you there to lawyer up? Make a case. Are you there? Because she was saying, I'm not the judge, man. That's not the placard. I'm a therapist. Doesn't say judge over the top of my door. So I'm not in here, you know, to figure that out. I'm here to help you find a third way. But again, so what is your point? If it is the win, then lawyer up. Then lawyer up, ammo up, weapon up, whatever, strengthen up and go pummel each other to death. If that's not, then by proxy, that is what we're talking about. I mean, the book could have been, he called it possible. He's saying possible, third way. There's got to be a third way. And when he's sitting across the table from two warring countries, there has to be a third way. Otherwise, the button's going to get pushed and we're all going to get blown up. So there's stakes on the line, and there are for all of us right now. And those stakes are money or relationship or, oh my gosh, our very soul being ripped apart. We've got to come up with the third way. And so it is, it's back to reframing. And you said something a minute ago. Well, you're just talking about the reality that we do live in this conflicting, it seems like more and more world of polarized people, and it's raining down. And Bill is out here trying to give us an umbrella so that we're the one person holding up an umbrella saying, it's not going to rain here. I'm going to find another way, but it's a different goal. And I do feel like with these issues, when we see the culture awash in something else, that man, to realize that we are bathing, we keep using this word bathing, like forest bathing, or it came up in another show recently and I can't recall what it was, but bathing, we are being bathed in, unless we're living in a hole somewhere. If we're online, if we touch social media, if we touch the media, if we touch just movies and TV shows, we are awash in black and white, right or wrong, judgment, conflict. That's what we're washing in. So we are really taking a different tangent to step out of this and say, wait, no, I'm going to think of myself now. I want to be the triangle guy. I'm the triangle guy.
I like that framing. I'm thinking of the triangle table. I never thought about, I was always, knights, the round table or whatever, but I really like the triangle thing.
That's true too. Yeah. I might get a triangle table. I do. I like the visual of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If setting the goal, is it to, man, cause I find myself in those situations and you could just hear myself or the other person, they're making a case. That's what we do. You and I dealt with it recently with business. There was one desire. They had a desire. We had a desire. And the propensity is to make a case. That's mine, man. I'm ready to sit down. I can write a novel, man. I can make a great case. And then I find it's irrelevant. If the other person is not there to be convinced, they're not saying, hey, I'm a little open to being convinced to your side. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not. But they're open to a bridge. Now we're back to that. They're not open to being convinced. Rarely are we in a conflict. But I might be to a bridge if you could show me another way. You get to take coffee up in the one thermos. I get to pick dinner or one meal. All right. That's fair. That's good. I didn't get my tea, but I got something else. That's a bridge. As opposed to you going, no, we're taking coffee unless you can beat it out of my hand.
Right. Well,
two different goals.
Yeah. And I mean, a last note maybe on that is that I feel like, and I feel like this comes up a lot actually. Well, I look at a situation, but just to make it easy to, for an analogy, it's like, say there's two guys in a room with a conflict and they're going to go at it. A lot of times our society is going to look at that and think, okay, that guy, oh man, that guy just decked that guy, or he kicked his butt or whatever. He won. Awesome. And I think that was kind of dumb actually. Like, what if the guy had like Jedi'd the guy into like peace and they walked out like high-fiving each other? That would have been awesome. But we don't do that as a society. We sort of put up on this pedestal that this, the guy that can beat the other guy or whatever. And I am saying guy specifically on this, cause it's usually dudes doing that. You don't find women having those kind of contests.
I'm thinking of MMA, right? I'm thinking about MMA right away, which, again, no judgment. I got respect for it. I can't really watch it because it's just too hard for me to see somebody get annihilated. And I don't watch it outside of, I've some movies like The Warrior, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Film. Very great film.
Love that. And it's around MMA. There's somebody sent me though, Jared, and it was an MMA scene. It was like a clip you would see. And I wish I could do better justice to it. And this one guy, I think it was two guys that were both Asian, and he got in the ring. They're like starting to fight. And then the guy's like, he figured out who the guy was. And it was somebody that he revered and respected for some reason. And he backed off and he's like, no, I'm not going to fight you. And he's out. And it was a bigger story than that, but I just love that. I love the, the honor and the context of that, of looking, there was a big, back to what William said, there was something bigger, there was something larger at work. And I want that always to be the case. Yeah.
I think that's the question to ask ourselves. What's the larger thing that could happen here? And that really is a third way question. It's like, what's the thing that could be bigger and better than the thing that we came into the room with?
Well, and you brought it up, so I'll go ahead and breach it when you talk about, divorce and marital strife. What is it? Usually if there's kids involved, it's the kids. That, oh my gosh, at the end of it, we cannot risk all out war.
And you know,
there's little lives here.
Yeah. I mean, personally, my choice and the discussion that we had for the audience here was let the children guide us. The exact words that we used was the vitality of our children will be our guide. Period. Yeah. So if the kids are struggling, that's on us. We're their parents. And with that goal in mind, it's important maybe to point that out too. The goal used to be fixing our marriage. When it became the vitality of the children only, we were able to let go of the marriage stuff, and then we got to be really great friends like we are now.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful. And that was a third way option I hadn't ever contemplated.
Yeah. I'm looking at my last notes, and I think the last thing I have written on Bill, he said, he's not an optimist or a pessimist. He's a possibilityist. And then the last thing I have written is, he says, less about the method, it's more about the mindset. That's it. That's what we're talking about. What is our conflict around mindset? Yeah. I might get like a triangle medallion or something like that. I love the thought of it, man, brother. Thank you. I knew that we would unpack this well, that you would bring greater insight into it. And man, great thanks to William Ury and his book Possible on this. What a gift. And and my gosh. And he, you know, you got to love it. He embodies it. He embodies the energy. I mean, I don't know if
he has a way and an inflection in his voice. You notice it.
He is the third way, man. He's embodying it inside. Well, man, again, folks, thank you. And I'll be wrapping this up. I'm thinking myself about the highlights of this, which I'll hit in part four. And again, I'll invite you guys to continue this discussion with us in the Drive Tribe. That's where we take these and come in. And I want to hear where you were inspired. I want to hear where you heard things and you go, man, I really struggle with that. Come talk to us. It's not about being right in there. It's about the third way and figuring out how we can take these concepts and we can all benefit. We can drive further, we can drive faster, and we can enjoy the ride. Thank you for being with us again. Love to join you in the community. Find me anywhere at kevinmiller.co. And today, thank you for letting us drive with you today.
Yeah.